rolling, we jump out. There were a number of police vehicles trailing us, and they've all come to a screeching halt with their sirens blaring. "Hey, John," Nine says, unfazed by any of it. "Yeah?" I say, shaking my head as I try to lose the dizzy feeling from the spinning truck. Neither of us is taking our eyes off the blinking crowd of police cars. He starts to step back towards the truck, and I do the same.
"We gotta get our chests back, dude, and do what BK said and get that woman agent."
"Definitely." I pat my pocket, making sure BK is still there.
"So why don't you take care of that while I take care of this?"
Nine telekinetically lifts two police cruisers off the ground, and the officers inside struggle to get out. I dash back to the truck, now smoldering in the ditch. I jump inside, avoiding the guard and Agent Purdy moaning on the floor, and find our chests. Special Agent Walker sits against what remains of the metal bench, staring at the blood on her hands in a daze. Her red hair falls loosely down her shoulders, and there's a long scrape along the side of her face. The Moog cannon is now a shattered pile of parts under her legs. She watches me arrange the chests under my arms, and I drop to a knee in front of her. "You're coming with us." "I am not asking." She opens her mouth to speak, and a trail of blood trickles out. It's then that I see the piece of metal sticking out of her shoulder. I put down one of the chests and try picking her up, but she groans and coughs up more blood. I let go, afraid if I move her again she'll bleed out and die before I can find out where Sarah and Sam are.
"Where are they?" I ask.
"Tell me now."
"You are going to die any second, lady, and I'm trying to save Earth and my friends. Now tell me! Where are Sam and Sarah?"
Special Agent Walker's head flops in my direction, and her green eyes open wide, as if seeing me for the first time. The gunfire outside is getting closer.
You're an alien," she finally whispers.
I punch the side of the truck in frustration. "Yeah, I am. But I'm here to help if you would just let me. Now before you run out of time, out of breath, tell me where they are. In Washington?" Her breathing turns ragged, and it's as if she can't see or hear me. I'm losing her. I'm losing her, and I still don't know where Sarah and Sam are. My voice sounds small all of a sudden. "Just tell me where they are, please." Our eyes meet, and I can tell I've gotten through to her. Special Agent Walker's mouth opens to speak, and it takes a couple of tries to find her voice.
"Out west, and..."
Then her voice trails off, and her eyes close. Her bloody hands clench and then relax. Her whole body goes slack.
"Wait! Hold on!"
I frantically grab at my chest, trying to get it open so I can get my healing stone. All I can think is, if I heal her, she'll tell me where they are. I've just placed my hand on the lock of the chest when a group of officers jump into the open end of the truck, guns drawn.
"Get away from the agent! Move, or we'll shoot! Down on the ground! Hands behind your back! Now!"
They are barking orders at me, but I can't obey. I don't want to obey. I need to get the healing stone. I need to hear what she was going to say. I reach to open the chest and I hear the officer screaming,
"Hands up! Hands up! Hands up!"
I reach into my chest anyway. I hear the first gunshot, immediately followed by dozens more. As the hail of bullets fly around me, my wrist starts to tingle more strongly than ever. It doesn't hurt anymore, and the bracelet starts to expand, covering my entire arm with a sheath of red material before spreading and popping open like an umbrella. I have no idea what is going on, and I really don't care. I can only think of my healing stone and the limp body of Walker so close, and yet so useless.
Suddenly, I'm behind a 6-foot-high shield that curls up over my head and under my feet. The bullets bounce right off of it. An orchestra of gunfire erupts, and countless bullets ricochet off my shield. After a couple of minutes, they become less and less frequent, like microwave popcorn that's almost done. When the gunshots finally stop, the red material compresses itself back into the arm sheath and then shrinks into the tingling bracelet around my wrist, all of its own volition. I look down, amazed at how effective it is, how perfect its timing is. Walker is still lying unconscious by my feet. The officers with their guns trained on the back of the truck just a moment ago are gone, but I hear gunfire outside. I'm torn between looking for my healing stone to revive Walker and going outside to see if Nine needs help. I want to wake her up, force her to tell me where Sam and Sarah are, but I can't leave Nine alone if he's in trouble. I decide that Walker will keep. She's clearly not going anywhere, and I just have to hope she doesn't die on me. I take the opportunity to stuff a chest under each arm and run out. As soon as I emerge, I see the officers running in the opposite direction. I don't know what Nine did while I was in there getting to know my bracelet a little better, but they all look terrified. Nine? I call over. What exactly did you do to them? He smiles.
Just use my telekinesis to lift them all about 30 feet in the air. Then I offer them a choice. Go higher or run away. I applaud the wisdom of their decision, don't you?
Looks like they made the right choice, I say.
Hey, I thought we were bringing the agent woman with us, Nine says.
She's still inside. She's unconscious, and I was going to use my healing stone on her, but I wanted to check on you first. Make sure you were okay, I tell him.
Dude, you were worried about me? I got this. We need her to tell us where we're going. You're the one who refuses to go anywhere that isn't towards your friends, remember?
Nine picks up an assault rifle and shoots it into the air.
Get in there and get her. I'll be out here playing with the soldier toys.
Officers continue to retreat on foot, some hiding behind trees on the side of the road. Nine aims the gun above their heads. The rifle rocks against his shoulder, and the bullets zip through the high branches. I can hear him cackling, enjoying the spectacle, as I move back to the truck. I open my chest and pull out my healing stone and duck into the truck to see how badly Walker is injured. But she's not there. I look around as if she might have gotten up and moved to a different part of the truck. I'm completely confused by what I'm seeing, what I am not seeing. There is no one there. The bodies that were there minutes ago are all gone. Shit! I'm furious with myself. I can't believe how badly I've screwed this up. Not only do we still not know where they have Sam and Sarah, but it is likely that Purdy and Walker are still out there.
Chapter 11. Number 8 is sitting in the grass. The lake is calm and still behind him. I am known by many different names. Some call me Vishnu, while others call me Paramatma, or Parameshwara. I am also known by my 10 avatars, 3 of whom you have met and battled. Quite successfully, I might add. If they are your avatars, they are a part of you. Which means you felt it necessary to declare war on 3 girls who were trying to reach you, Creighton spits out. You're supposed to be impersonating a peaceful god, aren't you? You have a lot of explaining to do, Marina adds. He is unmoved by our anger and remains seated. I had to be sure you are who you claim to be. I had to be sure you were ready to meet me. My apologies if your feelings, or anything else, were hurt. You all proved yourselves, if that makes you feel any better. I'm fed up. I'm tired and hungry. Not to mention I flew across the world and fought an army to get here. I want answers. I stand up, fists clenched at my sides. I'm going to ask a question, and if you don't answer me directly, we're leaving. This isn't a philosophical discussion, and you had no right to test us. Are you or are you not number 8? He looks up at me and purses his lips. His skin color changes from blue to a deep copper tone. When he shakes his head, the crown falls off and his black hair grows into a shaggy mop of curls. Two of his arms vanish, and in a matter of seconds, a shirtless teenage guy sits on the grass in front of us. Commander Sharma gasps. He's kind of thin, but toned. With his full lips and thick black eyebrows, I must say he's kind of hot. Around his neck hangs a blue Lorian pendant. He's one of us. Ella looks over at Creighton, who exhales a long breath. He opens his mouth, about to say something, but the boy speaks first. My Sepan originally named me Joseph, but I have gone by many names. In this region, most people know me by the name Naveen. He pauses and looks at me, then pulls up the ragged leg of his pants to reveal the scarred Loric symbols of 1, 2, and 3 on his ankle. If you want to get all Loric on me, then yes, you can call me Number 8. The anger bubbling inside of me pops and disappears. We have found another member of the Guard. We just got stronger. Creighton steps forward and offers his hand. We've been looking for you, 8. We've traveled a long distance. I'm Creighton, Ella's Sepan. 8 stands and shakes Creighton's hand. He's tall, and every muscle in his upper body and stomach is very well defined. He's clearly been training for years, surviving alone in the mountains. Ella stands as well. I'm Ella, she says. I'm number 10. Whoa, 8 says. He looks into her eyes. What do you mean you're number 10? There are only 9 of us. Who told you you're number 10? All of a sudden, Ella shrinks down to become a 6-year-old girl. I guess there's nothing quite like having your identity being questioned by a former statue to give you a crisis of confidence. Creighton nudges Ella, and then, just as quickly, she transforms back into her tall 11-year-old self. 8 responds by growing 5 feet taller to tower over her. That all you got, 10? Determination covers Ella's face, and it looks as if she's trying to grow another few years, but nothing happens. After a few seconds, she shrugs. I guess so. Creighton turns to 8. I'll fill you in later, but there was another ship that left Lorien after yours. Ella and I were on that ship. She was just a baby at the time. Is that it, or is there a number 32 I should know about? 8 asks, shrinking back down to his regular height. His voice is husky, but also kind. For the first time, I notice his eyes are the most amazing shade of deep green. By the look on Marina's face, she is noticing all of this, too. I can't help but smile as she nervously tucks her hair behind her ears. Ella's the last, Creighton answers. This is 6, and this is Marina, number 7. You appear to be able to shapeshift. Anything else we should know about? Creighton asks. Indeed, I do have that legacy, 8 says. Among other things. Oh, yeah? Like what? Marina asks. 8 turns and skips along the surface of the pool as if it were solid ice. When he circles back to us, he begins to sprint before skidding to a stop, sending a wave of water towards Marina. But Marina is not going to get shown up by the new guy. Without flinching, she lifts her hands and stops the water midair, then pushes it back at 8 with her telekinesis. He, in turn, blows the wave high into the air like a geyser. Not to be left out of whatever game it is they're playing, I take control of the wind and I use it to push the geyser across the pool until a wall of moving water surrounds 8 on 3 sides. "What else you got?" I shout, my voice daring him to keep things going. 8 disappears from where I've trapped him behind the water, and an instant later reappears on the jagged rocks above the pool. He disappears again and shows up inches from my nose. 8's sudden closeness is so jarring I reflexively throw a fist into his ribs. He grunts and stumbles backwards. 6, what are you doing? Marina yells. Sorry, I say. It was a reflex. I deserved it, says 8, shrugging off Marina's protectiveness. So you can teleport? Marina asks. That is very cool. He suddenly appears at her side and casually leans an arm on her shoulder. I am a fan of it. Marina giggles and shrugs him off. Giggles? Is she kidding me? 8 smiles, disappears, and shows up again standing on Creighton's shoulders, balancing with exaggerated arm circles and wobbly legs. Sometimes I pick stupid places to land, though. 8 is our jester all of a sudden. I'm struck by his playfulness, unsure if it's going to be an attribute or a liability. I decide to view it as a positive. I can just see the annoyance and confusion on the Mogadorians' faces moments before this kid turns them to ash. Creighton leans forward and, as if they'd rehearsed the routine in advance, 8 does a flip onto the ground, then claps his hands, obviously pleased with himself. Where's your sapon? Marina asks. 8's cheerful face turns serious. We all know what this means. Instantly, my mind goes to an image of Katerina gagged and chained to a wall. I think of John and his sapon, Henri. I shake away the memories before tears form in my eyes. How long ago? Creighton gently asks the question we are all thinking. 8 spins to look out over the field of high grass beyond us. With his mind, he parts the grass left and right until there's a narrow path. He raises his head at the setting sun. Listen, we have to get out of here. The light is going. I'll tell you all about Reynolds and Lola on the way. Commander Sharma runs up to 8 and grabs his wrist. What about me? What can I do for you? Please tell me. He startles me. I've been so wrapped up in our little session of getting to know you, and he's been so quiet. I completely forgot his role in all this. Commander, 8 says, you have been a loyal friend to me, and I want to thank you and your soldiers for all your hard work. Vishnu would be very happy with your devotion. I'm afraid now we must part ways. It's clear by the expression on the commander's face that he thought he was in this for the long haul. But I don't understand. I have done everything you have asked of me. I brought you your friends. My men have died for you. 8 looks Commander Sharma in the eyes. I never wished for anyone to die for me. That's why I refused to leave the mountain and walk with you in the streets. I'm sorry lives were lost, more sorry than you will ever know. Believe me, I know what it feels like to lose people. But this is where we must go our separate ways. He's firm, but I can see it's hard for him to do this. But 8 cuts him off. Goodbye, Commander. The man turns, a look of despair on his face. Poor guy. But he is a soldier who knows when to take an order. When to accept how things are going to be. You're leaving me. No, 8 says. You are leaving me. You are off to something bigger and better. A wise man once told me that only by leaving someone good can you meet someone better. You will be with your Vishnu, and you will only know him once I am gone. It's hard to watch. Commander Sharma opens his mouth to say something, but closes it when 8 turns and walks down the path without looking back. At first, I think 8 is being too harsh. Then I realize this is the kindest way he can do what must be done. "Hey, wait!" Creighton calls after 8. "The base of the mountain is..."